Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for commentary on all things movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And also, like and subscribe to us on Spotify. And as always, this episode was filmed before a live studio ostrich. Wani B, wasn't that for today's show?
Hey, Kosi, good to be here. As usual, we have our segment of trailer trash. We go over the Furiosa trailer, trailer for Twisters, and a little, I guess, ticket trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Just trying to get us to buy the ticket. Good excuse to talk about the
not at all.
That upcoming movie. Anyways, since Furiosa is coming out, we thought we'd do another retro review and bring you Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
Oscar winner movie. Great movie to see.
Yes, it is.
And of course, we end with a usual plug of the week.
All right, let's get into it, man. Dude, so how have you been, man? How's the week been looking?
It's been looking pretty good, man. I don't know if you happened to see Terrence Howard did a show on Joe Rogan.
I see.
Apparently, this dude claims 1 times 1 equals 2. Did you watch this episode, Kosi?
I've been making... I'm saving it. I want to sit down and really savor. Look... For those of you who don't know, Terrence Howard is a national treasure. He says Maine. He's that kind of guy. But I love Terrence Howard. I think people want to say he's crazy. They're not wrong, but like he's eccentric. He's I guess he was the first roadie in Iron Man. If you guys, for all you nerds out there,
the first roadie. I actually watched a clip of him talking about him losing that role. Basically, they wanted to cut down his agreed upon salary heavily, and he was like, "Hey." No, I mean, not even him. His agent was like, hell no, and like hung up the phone all Hollywood style, according to him.
Okay.
And then, then RDJ ghosted him. Robert Downey Jr. ghosted him when he tried to ask for help. Apparently, he had given up
Iron Man.
Apparently, he had given up a million of his salary so they could bond Robert Downey Jr. because that was when he was still on. So the notoriety of being on drugs and being a party. But I think he was just coming out of jail recently. Goodness. It's actually a nice section. I don't think he's a full-on lunatic, but he's bought into delusions of self-grandeur.
Yeah, and I heard like he has a bunch of patents. Like, you know, he's a very smart guy.
I've heard he has a bunch of patents. I don't know, man. He literally thinks 1 times 1 equals 2. It's like he said. I heard some other clips about some goofy stuff he thought. Delusions of grandeur seems to be the right word for it.
Look, hey man, just sending peace out to our brother Terrence Howard. You're welcome.
I can tell you right now, he is not going to change the mathematical paradigm of our society or whatever he thinks he's doing.
He will not, but he made a great song called Whoop That Trick off of the Hustle and Flow album. It was great.
He was involved in A Heart Out Here for a Pimp, right?
Yeah. Him and 3-6 Mafia got him a Grammy. So look,
an Oscar.
Yes. So yeah, we definitely love him.
Throw some respect on 3-6 Mafia's name.
My mistake. Now we love our brother Terrence Howard. So yeah, I'll check that out when I get a chance. But dude, trailer trash. What's up first?
Anyways, it's trailer trash time. And guys, first of all, we're going to start with the Twisters trailer, actually.
Let's do it.
So, Kosi, you ever watched the original?
Dude, the original Twister, like every child of the 90s, gave me nightmares just because of the beginning of the Helen Hunt's character as a little girl, her dad getting just torn out from their hurricane shelter. Because, you know, it's a hurricane shelter, so I figured as a kid, you know, we're safe in the shelter. But no, the tornado pulled a Kool-Aid man and just... plucked them out, and it was really terrifying and traumatizing as an 8-year-old. So no, I have fond memories of the movie Twister.
Yeah, no, I actually didn't watch the movie in large part because right when it was coming out, it was after it was in theaters, but it was still like in DVDs back when movies releasing on DVD was a big second event. I actually went to the Universal. I don't know if you could call it a ride. It's like an experience.
Experience.
You don't ride anything. You kind of walk through it.
That's cool.
And I was, I'm guessing around 9, 10 years old. I don't remember the exact year. Mm-hmm. What year did that movie come out?
96.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, I came in 98, so it was actually a couple of years afterwards.
Right.
But we were in Universal. We were walking through, I'm guessing 99, 2000. Anyways, we go through that ride. And let me tell you, Kosi, I was not psychologically prepared. I don't know if we just don't have tornadoes in Colombia or if there's just not a thing people warn you of. No. But I was not prepared for what I was about to
Nothing
witness.
Nothing can prepare you.
I saw a big-ass cow flying through the air. Okay, obviously, nice, animatronic, nice. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Man, it was terrifying. I saw a lot of other stuff that was cool.
Wait, was it like on a gimbal or like a rope, whatever?
I'm guessing, man. I was a little kid, man. For me, it was a real ass cow flying through the air.
It might as well been real. Yeah,
yeah. I was absolutely terrified. I like saw maps of Tornado Alley, and Houston was dangerously close.
We're like we're striking distance, but like close enough where it's kind of scary.
No, I thought we were full on in Tornado Alley. I was not good enough at geography to tell we were not.
Freaking last week we had it was basically a little one, but it was enough for me, enough for all of us.
It wasn't a full on tornado like you've seen some of the ones happen in Oklahoma. There's been some scary ones lately.
Yeah, those are horrifying.
But it turns out hurricanes are actually arguably more terrifying if you remember Harvey.
Oh yeah.
But point was, man, when it came time to watch the movie, because my parents were like, oh hey, we get to watch the movie that cool scene we were in was based on.
Uh-huh.
And I was absolutely not interested. I could not tell you. I mean, I had a phobia of tornadoes for a long, long time. I'm pretty sure I would crap my pants if I saw a tornado in real life.
I think what Twister did for kids to be scared of tornadoes is what Jaws did for kids in 75 when everybody to go into the water. Because, like, yeah, like, if, because it's a real thing. But it looks like something that's like out of a kaiju film. Is this big destructive thing? And like what I loved about the movie, the first Twister, is that it captured that. Like special effects was like on the up and up in 96, but like it really, really put its budget out there with all the special effects in there. It's what I remember the most about that movie.
For sure. Anyways, taking it back to this movie, Twisters.
Yes, Twisters.
I don't know what to say about this movie. It honestly looks like Sharknado without the sharks. The whole time, there just looks like they're chasing after Tornado.
You're not wrong.
It's like a slasher film, but instead of a slasher, it's just tornadoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems low-key goofy.
It seems goofy, but honestly, what is saving it is the one and only Glenn Powell. Glenn Powell, you put that
Glenn
man
Powell
in anything.
Glenn Powell and Usnavi. What's his name again?
His name is Anthony Ramos. So He was in Rise of the Beast last year.
He was in Rise of the Beast. He was in Hamilton.
Hamilton, yes.
He was in
The Heights.
In The Heights. He was the lead in The Heights.
Yeah, it's a great, good it's
actor.
A great cast.
Good
yeah.
actor. He's been in some good roles. I think it's something else. I can't remember off the top of my head right now.
He was in Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Like little bit parts here
yeah,
and there.
He's had his roles. Yeah. Good actor.
Yeah.
I don't know who the main girl is.
Daisy. So she was in a lot of people didn't see this, but from Where the Crawdads Lie. It was a movie that came out a couple years ago.
Our buddy Aaron recommended that.
Yeah. Where the Crawdads Sing. It was like
there
a
we
book
go. Where the
movie.
Crawdads Sing. The redneck.
Movie. Yeah. So this is like her big. It's like her big movie. Like she's been in like little stuff, but this is like the biggest thing that she's be in. And like this cast, like Brandon Perea, we saw him in Nope. Sasha Lane, we saw her in Loki and other stuff. David Cornsworth, the new Superman, he's in this. It's a pretty good cast. So Lee Isaac Chung, he directed. Let's see what he directed. I'm not familiar with this guy's work. He did Minari. So Minari, the one with Steven Yeun, movie came out a couple years ago.
I don't think I did watch that movie.
Yeah. So this is like he's going from like this. That was more of a smaller like family focused movie, but now this is a big sequel tentpole summer movie, and you know he like bring those sensibilities over to that. But are you excited for Twisters at all? Any looking
I'm
forward
still,
to that?
I'm not sure. Is it like what do they call it? Exposure therapy? Where I need to like confront my fears and
I keep forgetting.
I'm telling you, man, it's like a phobia for me. It's like even with hurricanes, I was like, oh, I know they're bad. Like I know theoretically they're bad.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, oh yeah, it's just a bunch of rain and shit. Let's go. No. With tornadoes, it's like, nah, man, I'm not trying to get flown up in the air like a cow. I'm not. No, man. I still can visualize that scene. I am not about that. I do not know if I can watch this new one just because. It's just a deep fear for me.
You know what? We'll go together and I'll hold your hand.
I appreciate that, Cozy.
No Diddy, but yeah, this comes out, or maybe a little bit of Diddy. Who knows? But yeah, this comes out July 19th, 2024, at theaters everywhere. And yeah, I'm excited. Juan's apprehensive for good reason, but hey, it looked cool. So
it looks like it could be fun.
Yeah,
I don't think it's gonna be a great movie, but it could be a fun movie.
Yeah. All right. So what's up next?
So Furiosa.
Furiosa.
Obviously a follow up, prequel actually, yes, to Oscar winner Mad Max Fury Road. We'll be reviewing that a little bit later, yes, in this episode.
Are. Yes.
So look, I think we discussed it a little bit in the previous time we talked about the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically kind of going over a different era of Furiosa's life.
Yeah.
Different. She's obviously a lot younger.
Yeah.
Kind of a bit of an origin story. It's not entirely clear from the trailer if she's already a badass who is just, you know, another badass story she has, or is this the story of how she becomes a badass?
Yeah, I think given that it's Anya Taylor-Joy, this looks to be like a young Furiosa, like maybe 10 years or 5 years before we see her in Furiosa. I'd say 10 years given just Anya Taylor-Joy's age, but yeah, you hit it on the head. It's a origin story of sorts for
Furiosa. Yeah, so it's tricky because, okay, we already know from Fury Road, the events are circumscribed, right? We already know she got taken from her, the many mothers as a child.
Yeah, from the green place.
From the green place. Mm-hmm. Kind of a paradise for her. And then she got taken. It's never specified that it was Immortan Joe who took her. Right?
Well, from the trailers, it looks like it's Chris Hemsworth's character. From what I'm seeing,
that's the thing. I don't think it's entirely clear what's going on.
It isn't clear.
What was his character's name?
His name is Dementis, which is
Dementis.
Another cool name. Great Mad Max name.
Where Immortan Joe was kind of more of a serious old school villain vibe. This is very much almost a Joker. If you watched Fast 10 with Jason Momoa,
he's hamming it up.
Like, that is that kind of vibe, but very hammy, over the top.
So much
flamboyant, I want to say villain almost.
He has a mustache, and I believe he twirls it in the trailer.
And I think he gets pink hair at some point.
Yeah, pink hair. He has a fake nose. They gave him the Thor cape. It looks like Chris Hemsworth is having really a lot of fun with this.
It's a Fat Thor knockoff, but obviously in a rated R film.
Yeah. Like, George Miller knew what's up when he got him. Little side bet, George Miller even said that he loved working with Chris Hemsworth so much that, like, he would be down to do Thor 5. George Miller would be actually down because he had such a good time working with Chris Hemsworth. But again, that just goes to show, just like, because Miller is an OG. We'll go into it with Furiosa, but he's been doing this for 40 years, and this world, he knows it so well. So looking at this trailer, like, well, what do you think? Like, what are your expectations going into this one after watching Fury Road? What are your expectations for Fury Road?
So obviously, I hope it lives up to its namesake, because that was an incredible movie.
Right.
I'm optimistic. Obviously, Taylor-Joy is a great actress. George Miller did the first movie, so hopefully he knows what we like. But I'm still have a little bit of trepidation, I guess you could call it, about the fact that it's like, what's interesting about this? You know, she has to end up in a position where she's like with Immortan Joe. Like, she can't end up in a position where she's fully free and doing her own thing and living, like, having a kind of happily ever after life, because we know she doesn't have that going into Mad Max Fury Road, right?
Right.
So, again, how it's a prequel like House of the Dragon, where it's telling a completely separate story.
Mm-hmm.
You can fully, like, yeah, you might know what happens, but it's so separate from what's going on later that, you know, you can just forget about that and just enjoy it for what it is. But since this is the same woman we've already seen, right? We already know how her story ends.
No, you have a point. I think that's why with this prequel, we'll definitely get, you know, her origin story. And I think also with these characters like Dementis, Immortan Joe's in this movie as well. And also we saw some other characters that we saw from Fury Road up in there. I think this movie is just to show, I guess, to convey the richness of this world that George Miller has made. The one thing I'll say too, just going by, because I have apprehensions, but not like yours. Fury Road again looked practical. Yes, there was CG involved with it. There was CG in shots. Like, not all the stuff was, like, obviously real. But when we get to Furiosa, just from the trailers we've seen, a lot of it looks, a lot of green screen, a lot of CG.
A lot of green screen.
And no, there's no knock, but like, you know, like for me, I like my green screen. And I want to know that it's not there, and I want to have the practical stuff kind of be in the forefront. This one, you could see a lot of like halos on people's heads. Again, it's not like, I'm not trying to rag on it, but it's definitely something that I did not, that I saw.
Yeah, we did discuss that last time. I probably should have brought that up again, but it wasn't as noticeable this time as in the first trailer. I will say that. It wasn't as immediately noticeable.
Okay.
But yeah, it's still a lot more noticeable. Frankly, the CGI in Mad Max Fury Road wasn't that great, so to speak.
Yeah, for 2015, though, it looks seamless, if you ask me. But anyway, you're right. It wasn't
the explosions and stuff. You can very clearly tell it's a movie explosion.
No, that one you saw with the tanker, that was real.
Really?
That was real. Yeah, I watched behind the scenes. Impressive. Isn't that? Yeah. Again, like stuff like that, when it, you know, like when you actually put that in there and like and want to showcase that, like show it. But again, just going by the trailers, it looks as though like some stuff in this new one looks a little, they're kind of taking more advantage of the fact they have, you know, technology to make stuff insane.
A good parallel that worries me is what happened between Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Or even if you want to go farther back, Star Wars original trilogy and the prequels.
Yeah.
Where, again, it's not that CGI movies have to be bad. Right? We obviously had plenty of fully animated movies that are amazing. But especially with an action movie like this, you can kind of tell the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
You, something about shooting on location. Again, shooting on location is not a panacea where it's automatically going to make a good movie. We saw Eternals was mostly shot on location, and that was a terrible movie.
Right, but
beautiful shots, I suppose, but terrible movie. But it definitely takes away a little bit from the experience of the first one, where you feel like you're watching something raw, where it's easier to suspend that disbelief, I suppose I should say.
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely agree. So that's just the apprehension I have going in. But again, it's George Miller. It's the same team that did Fury Road. So I am definitely excited for this. This actually comes out in theaters this week. So we're on the eve of it debuting in theaters. So yeah, they're gonna check that out and just look for a review of that from us coming in a few weeks when we go to check that out. So Furiosa: Mad Max Saga comes out May 24th. So what's next for Trailer Trash One?
Next, so they released a bit of a trailer for Deadpool.
A kind of trailer, yeah.
Kind of just a, because why don't you describe it for us?
Yeah, it was like it's basically an announcement. It was like, hey, the tickets are on sale, and it's kind of like the same footage we've seen, but like that little end tag where like Deadpool's on top of Wolverine, and he's like, oh, I'm almost finished. And Wolverine's like, what? He's like, oh, I'm trying to get the knife out of your butt. Come on, stop being weird. Like, it's a funny little tag. So that's like the newest thing we've gotten. But yeah, it's just a shameless ticket announcement. But some eagle-eyed fans out there who are crazier than I am, I actually got this from them. Shout out to New Rock Stars. They actually pointed this out. So there was a little QR code in the trailer. Mm-hmm. And like if you click on it, it took you to a recording of Ryan Reynolds kind of like just kind of poking fun. So I'm gonna read this. I'm gonna do my best Ryan Reynolds impression. We're very excited to be joining you July 26th. Many of you who are very excited, but we should set the table correctly. This film is as paper thin as a sequel to Battlefield Earth. We're mostly going to beat each other senseless, make enemies with Disney, tell a few dick jokes, make a few jokes at my expense, make a lot of jokes at Hugh's expense, and completely sidestep Marvel's mandated after-credit sequence, which you haven't figured out yet is always just a commercial for another movie that will invariably end with commercial for another movie. So sit back, relax, and let us lower your IQ and raise your heart rate while we travel to a vapid dreamland, a place where grown men and grown women walk around in tights and act like it's not a giant cultural cry for help. This is cinema. So that's what the recording said, and I thought that was just a great, just
like, that's a great call out.
Yeah, it's a great.
It's tricky because it's like, okay, you're calling it out, but you're part of it.
Oh, he reminds me
of that She-Hulk at the end where they have the Feige bot.
It reminded me of that. I thought that was pretty funny. How like, you know,
the problem with that I felt is that okay, it's cool to have the self-awareness, but then you got to learn from the self-awareness. Because She-Hulk was like, oh, how we're going to have these characters, and we're going to have this post-credit scene, and we're just going to have this big fight between the good guys and the bad guys, this big CGI fight, and calling out basically all the Marvel sins. And then they just kept doing it. All right? They just kept doing it in other shows. They even had, like, oh, here is Hulk's son as a little throw-in in She-Hulk. It's like, you were literally just making fun of yourselves for doing this in every movie.
It's a really hard thing, and again, that's why Deadpool, the Deadpool movies do this the best. It's hard to do that feat of being self-aware, ragging on yourself, but also still kind of sticking the landing of what it is. So, like, She-Hulk, even I liked what they did with that at the end with the whole like little Kevin robot thing. Again, the so-so on the Hulk Jr. But with Deadpool, they've shown us since 2016 that they could make fun of themselves and, like, just, you know, at this point in time, everyone's kind of down on Marvel for good reason, but since he's Marvel Jesus, he's here to bring things, try to right the ship. It's funny that we're getting this kind of marketing from Deadpool, because the marketing for the movies has always been great. So I'm excited, and
it is interesting that they're very directly calling Marvel strategy out. And call again some stuff that Marvel themselves has pretty much already called out. So it's clever, but only if you show that awareness in the actual movies.
Yeah.
If you just call out that you're being repetitive and tired and your ideas aren't fresh anymore, but then you keep using the same tired, fresh ideas in your movies.
It kind of brings more attention to the fact that
you're
being
tired. It just
becomes
like, oh, here's a little clever moment, but it doesn't stick the landing because, okay, you haven't learned, right? You're making fun of yourself, but you're still doing the same thing. So what? You're literally telling me that the rest of your content sucks. So why am I watching it?
Right. But in all honesty, do you think this team that's behind this movie would say that and not stick the landing?
I do have more faith in Ryan Reynolds, obviously Hugh Jackman, the rest of this team.
This team could make that joke, even in the marketing, and you just know.
They have a chance. But I would not be entirely surprised if we consider this the worst Deadpool movie when it all is said and done.
Well, it's. I think that's hyperbole, but it's tough to tell by now.
The first two were pretty good.
Yeah,
the first two were pretty good. And right now, the main appeal of this one seems to be, oh, hey, we got Hugh Jackman doing the role in the OG Wolverine costume. Again, we'll see. Getting big name actors and big member berry type castings and stuff is not what made the original two Deadpools great.
If anything, that's actually what did, because I argue that's what did, because people, for a Deadpool movie, especially one in this scale, we're coming for them member berries. We're coming for Wolverine in a yellow suit is what people have been looking for the past, like, 25 years. So, like, I see what you mean. Like, definitely Marvel's burned you and a lot of the audience, but the reason why this thing sold out in theaters, like, look, if you look in theaters, it's sold out. The reason why it's sold out in, like, a bunch of theaters, because even 2 months out, is because a lot of people who felt like you have seen and said, oh, man, they're really putting, like, their foot into this. Now, yeah, like, God forbid they land on their faces, but from what they've shown and just the hype, it feels different. It feels like, you can tell, like, in this whole post 2020 era, this is the thing where everyone's kind of come together and been like, oh, maybe Marvel's cooking. So, like, I don't know.
Honestly,
it looks
even
like
then,
even
if this sticks to landing, I mean, all we're talking about is Ryan Reynolds still making good movies. I don't see how that translates to anything else as far as the rest of Marvel.
Well, it because in order to turn a corner, you have to have a win. So you have a win here with Deadpool.
Right,
and
but
Wolverine.
It's like when James Gunn made Guardians of the Galaxy 3. He's gone now, right? If all you can do is turn it over to certain amazing directors and certain amazing writers and have him make magic, it's not that that's a bad tactic. That's actually a pretty good tactic.
Yeah.
But it means, you know, that the rest of Marvel, where it's not Ryan Reynolds, again, where's the selling point? Like, if you're just going to keep getting random no-name people to make these movies, and I don't know. I'm just at a point where I really need to see some big things from Marvel.
Yeah, they got a lot to prove.
The first two Deadpool movies were fantastic. So, I mean, this has a lot to live up to. Yeah. It's actually not a big stretch to say it could be the worst. Yeah. It's going to be rated R, right?
Yeah, rated R. Yeah, I just think just personally going in, I think this looks pretty cool and just what it has,
honestly,
all the stuff.
I know
we're
on a kind of a geeky show, but on a personal basis, I mean, Hugh Jackman's been doing great roles without, like, you know, some member buried yellow suit. I don't know. That doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, but you can't deny that scene, even with X-Men 97, like, we're getting the comic accurate stuff. Like,
I've just never been about that, right? Again, we already had 20 years of Hugh Jackman being absolutely amazing. 25 years of Hugh Jackman being absolutely amazing without a yellow suit. The fact that he has one now doesn't really. It's Hugh Jackman I'm excited about. If it was a different actor in a yellow suit, I'd be substantially less excited.
I gotcha. Look, so I think all signs point to this being that smash freaking hit. Again, it's like sold out in theaters.
Absolutely.
2 months out. Deadpool and Wolverine comes out July 26th. And yeah, you can bet your asses, guys, we'll have a review of that coming at the end of July. So yeah, man. So what we got up next, dude?
So now we're going to get into another retro review. We're
going to
kind of tie into the Furiosa trailer review, Mad Max Fury Road. So a little bit of, I guess, plot on the movie. So Mad Max Fury Road kind of takes place in a post-apocalyptic world. Everything's barren. The movie doesn't really go into a lot of detail.
A little bit. In the beginning, they have like a little bit of voiceover. Like the
they
world
have a little bit, but
poison.
I mean,
yeah.
Like it's implied to be some kind of nuclear annihilation type thing.
That's really all we need to set up.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah. Frankly, this movie almost takes it to an extreme. The idea of show, don't tell. You know, it does not really go into a lot of backstory.
Oh, yeah.
It does not really go into a lot of characters' motivations or do a bunch of big scenes establishing how evil they are or how righteous they are. Mm-hmm. The movie pretty much just goes from the first minute.
It presses the gas, like, from the opening credits. Like, it has an energy about it. That's what I first noticed when I first saw it in 2015.
Very kinetic style of shooting. So again, we kind of open with the titular Mad Max. He gets captured by this kind of crazy...
The War Boys.
The War Boys, this kind of cult type, kind of cult / post-apocalyptic society.
A lovely band of weirdos, to call them.
They're ruled by a guy named Immortan Joe, who kind of controls the flow of water. He has his own crops. He has his own kind of harem of wives. Interesting thing to note right away is that almost everyone in this movie, except somehow Tom Hardy looks great, but most people in this movie look heavily deformed
or something.
Look like they
something's
got some
to them. Yeah.
Some ultimate kind of cancer situation
or missing limbs and
sunburnt, all this stuff. Again, the exception being for the most part Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy. I guess they couldn't. They needed to market the movie somehow, right?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah,
attractive people.
The beautiful people.
Attractive people help sell movies. So the movie starts again pretty much right away, like 5-10 minutes in. Really, you barely even get any kind of time to get adjusted to the world we're living in. After just a little bit of brief introduction, basically Furiosa, Charlize Theron, takes a party to go get supplies. They're going to Gasoline Town.
Yeah, it's called Gas Town.
Gas Town. And they call it Guzzoline, like a gas guzzler.
And I think with this movie, the awesome thing, a lot of people say that it's like two big awesome car chases, and like it really is that. Like when it gets started, it kicks off.
It's three, but yeah.
Yes. And it's you're right. It shows us. It doesn't really tell. It doesn't waste time telling. Everything you're seeing on the screen like has a purpose, serves a story, pushes the story forward, and like it's all just it's art. Like to call it. Just watching the terrain and where they filmed that. It's bunch of colors and just contrast. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous made film.
The movie pretty much all happens the same. I don't want to say day because the day goes by, but it just happens continuously.
Yeah.
Right. There's no time jumps. There's no flashbacks. There's no. It's just, you know, it starts with Furiosa trying to escape with Immortan Joe's kind of harem, his wives. She's trying to lead them to safety. She has a she was basically, her backstory, the little bit we're given is that she had a group of, what was it, the Many Mothers?
Yeah, the Many Mothers.
The Many Mothers, obviously some kind of group of hardened women survivors out in the wilderness. And they come from the Green Place. So again, simplistic names, but obviously like a fertile, nice ground in this.
Garden of Eden almost, yeah.
Yeah, for her specifically, since she was taken as a child, that kind of represents like a kind of heaven for her, right?
Yeah.
A kind of utopia where, oh, if I can get back there, I can get back to what I was truly supposed to live. And then she decides to take these women who were Morton Joe's wives with her. So she takes off. At the beginning of the movie, I mean, she's trusted enough by him that, you know, she's leading a war party. She has this big truck with tons of supplies.
That sequence, like when like they're trying to like get the trying to get the war boys off their path, the whole sequence of them like getting attacked, like what'd you think of that? Because like that's one of those where like the movie, I don't remember like what people are saying, but I just remember like different visuals and like the visual of them like throwing like those bomb spikes into, remember that, like whatever those were.
Yeah, so okay, the movie is absolutely incredible when it comes to action.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but these car chases, just the way, not just the action itself, but the way the setting is created. You see these different cars there. You know, a big part of what makes the movie work is that, you know, these cars, these things they use, they kind of have built up their little religion based on...
they worship the V8 and the
based on these kind of filtered out signs of our civilization.
It's cool world building. It's kind of cool.
They don't ever really go into where all the details are, but they're like kind of worship V8. What's his name? Holt. Nicholas Holt.
Nux. Yeah, yeah.
He says... You know, they talk about Valhalla, how they're going to be like be ascended to Valhalla. But then he talks about how he's going to be Mac feasting. And somebody tells him it's his manifest destiny to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like filtered like of our culture, but in almost this kind of childish and malformed way. Honestly, it's an interesting philosophical exercise on how that kind of society is created. They don't really go into the lore of it. They don't really go into any of the specifics of what the war boys are, why they need this blood, all this stuff.
Yeah, human blood bags. Yeah,
they call them half-lives. They do all this stuff. They're all pale. They don't really go into any of this. They don't really go into who Morton Joe is. And honestly, I think the movie is better for it overall because it leads you to just focus on these action scenes. So you get into this action scenes with all these more informed cars, more informed people, and you know, you have this epic music going on.
Oh man, like I gotta stop here. Like Junkie XL had like just he's an incredible producer, composer. So he did stuff for Batman vs. Superman, obviously. He did stuff for Wonder Woman, for Mad Max, and like his music, it's like it's from the flaming guitar guy, like everything has like a purpose, everything has like a reason for being there, and it all kind of crescendos into like this, it's like a guttural noise and sound. It's crazy stuff that Junkie XL does to bring this stuff to life, because it's one thing to shoot this, but to have the music and like then and the orchestra and the score to underscore all that, it's just amazing work. So Junkie XL, just huge kudos to him on
that. The movie borderline plays, I mean, the music borderline plays into the plot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? When those car chases are going on, again, Cozy kind of briefly mentioned it, there's an actual big truck, a massive truck with huge speakers, a bunch of drummers, and a dude going absolutely hard on an electric guitar.
Flaming guitar guy.
Flaming guitar. You know, absolutely shredding it.
He was in the trailers. You can't miss him.
He gets you hyped, obviously, but he's also part of it is getting the people hyped. Yep. You know, and Morton Joe's basically getting these war boys to suicide themselves for him.
Yeah, just for his
right?
own game.
That's the cult. They start yelling, witness, witness me.
And you know, those spray, like,
those spray shiny and chrome. Yeah, spray paint on their mouth. They kind of look like skeletons when they do that. You know, they're going to arrive at the gates of Valhalla. Nicholas Holt does such a great job of selling all this, man. Witness blood bag. All these lines are fantastic. And then obviously when they fail to suicide themselves, they're called mediocre. If they don't kill themselves in a spectacular enough fashion, they're called mediocre.
You just get trolled by Immortan Joe.
Yeah, like they're all, everybody will troll them. It's like they're hyped to kill themselves. They're literally, it's not totally dissimilar from suicide bombers, you know, being told that they'll have 40 wives.
Very much like it. Like the religion kind of reminds you of that. And I think just to offer just some more backstory to that. So just upon just researching, just watching like the behind the scenes and just reading it, in this make-believe world that they're in, the whole fight began because countries were fighting over fuel. Like the, it began in like the late 70s in their timeline because there was a fight for fuel. And like, so you can see even the beginning of how this all started was because people wanted to be able to run their cars, or the lack of being able to run their cars made tensions rise. So to see how we get an Immortan Joe, or how we get a Dementis in the new Furiosa movie, or how we get a Max Furiosa, like, it, like the whole hallmark of this world is cars. It's kind of weird how George Miller turned that into like, you know, a crazy religion, and you see it being played out. So I guess looking at going through this movie, what'd you think of Tom Hardy? Because it's a big deal to replace Mel Gibson, who played Max for three movies.
I never watched the original, so I don't have kind of perspective on it. You don't really need to, as far as I can tell, for this movie. It seems self-contained.
Right. But how do you think he did, like, as a
man? So I think he did well overall, but I do, on some level, he's kind of the protagonist. The movie keeps you focused on him and what happens to him. Mm-hmm. But he's not that relevant.
Yeah, you're also the draw in this movie.
Especially in terms of, he has no real personality or motivations.
He's kind of a blank slate that grunts.
Right, yeah, he kind of helps them. He kind of is an epic action scenes. Mm. But, you know, at one point they do a thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to go off by my own. Like, you know, the classic selfish dude that hasn't learned the value of family and stuff. But then, like, 10 seconds later, he just rides off after them. Like, the movie is completely uninterested in any kind of arc or character development for Tom Hardy.
For him. So do you think, you know, the movie's called Mad Max Fury Road. Do you think it's maybe a mistake to kind of have the real arc be with Furiosa?
I don't think it was. I mean, I thought it was an incredible movie, so I don't think it was.
Okay.
It did feel almost like Mad Max was tacked on because they wanted to call it Mad Max.
Right, to get butts in seats, which, right, I don't blame
them. So they wanted to use the IP, and so they had to have a guy named Max who was a madman.
Right.
Right. But, you know, there's no, he's borderline forgettable, right? You know he's there. He's obviously, Tom Hardy is a great actor.
Oh yeah, he killed
but
it.
You know, like the Nux's arc is absolutely incredible. Yeah, from being a demented, fully on board with suicide cult, he is heavily disappointed when he fails to kill himself in spectacular fashion in front of Immortan Joe.
But that's
a whole thing. He like cries about how disappointed he is that he could not kill himself successfully.
I think also what's beautiful about Nux's story was, yeah, he was disappointed. Like, he kind of, his soul and his belief was crushed, but his beliefs were restored when he met like the many mothers and I'm sorry, the sister wives. And like, it was kind of restored. He kind of got a new sense of purpose and he went out like a G. Like, I loved how Nux really came through.
The turnaround from him, you know, screaming, "Witness me," to, you know, in this kind of crazed bloodlust, obviously cultish way to,
assault.
Hey, I'm sacrificing myself.
Yeah,
witness me doing this because I love you and because I care about you and because, you know, it's the right thing to do. You know, not because I'm waiting at the gates of Valhalla and I got the 40 virgins or whatever.
No,
it's because
you're my purpose.
I've fully become human. Like, he's literally called the half-life. He's literally a half human, not even fully.
Yeah, they look down upon him.
Fully realized person. And by the end of the movie, you know, the skin color, you saw it becoming so pale. Yeah. You don't see like the little, like, he almost looks like a skull, like a skeleton often early on in the movie. By the end of the movie, he looks like a full on human. Like, he, you know, it's a visual sign.
Yeah, it told a story.
He's regained his humanity.
It was telling a story through like how he looked throughout the movie. Yeah,
a little bit of secondary that. With that is Furiosa. You got that dark makeup early on, that covering her face, that signature makeup. By the end of the movie, it's pretty much all gone.
Yeah,
it's
by the end, yeah,
slowly wiped away with the sweat, with everything. They don't like have a whole goofy moment where they show her wiping it off and becoming a new person.
No,
they again, it's a show not tell movie to an extreme. They do not hold your hand. They kind of expect you to read the character's expressions, take, you know, the wordplay, the different symbols from our society, and, you know, make up your own story. Use your imagination to fill in the blanks.
I think that's why it holds up as an action movie. It's one of those action movies that uses action to tell the story, but it doesn't, as I said, hold your hand. It lets you, the viewer, infer and make these inferences, man, and kind of like, you know, try to decide for yourself. So I guess moving forward then, like, where do you think they could go? Because obviously, like, we have Furiosa coming out.
Well, obviously, what they're going forward is a prequel.
Yeah, we have Furiosa. Like, but where else?
The end of the movie, it does not lead itself. Obviously, you could set another future Mad Max movie. You could reboot something like that.
Not even that. Just would you want to, like, maybe see a story in this world? Maybe not even about people we've seen, but just a new... Because it's a large world.
It is an interesting world. Part of what was so appealing about the first movie was the uniqueness of the action scenes. Mm. A huge part of the movie happens on moving cars. The action scenes and the stunt scenes happen with people doing crazy stuff on moving cars, right?
Right.
I don't know how many times you can keep doing that. The world is interesting in a way, but it's a pretty barren. Everybody's just trying to survive and struggle. Again, the interesting characters in the interesting, unique set pieces... Or what kind of made this movie. You know, there's only so many car chases you can see. As we've seen with Fast and Furious, at some point you start running out of crazy things to do with cars.
I liken this not so much to Fast and Furious. I liken this more so to basically what they're doing and what they can do with John Wick. I think this is more expansive because I disagree. I think you can be inventive with cars. Because George Miller, he's like the guy that's showing us he can do like a lot of stuff with like stunts and cars and just what this world is. It's ripe for being able to tell new stories, but also pushing the boundaries of what you could do in terms of stunts, in terms of what you can do with like action. So I think George Miller in a interview said, you know, I was working on Furiosa for like 10 years, but also working on a Mad Max story that takes place before when we see him in Fury Road. Because so Mad Max 3 Beyond Thunderdome happened, and then Fury Road kind of takes place, let's say, like 15 years after that. Mm-hmm. So George Miller wrote a treatment that took place after Thunderdome, but before Fury Road. So stuff like that were like, there's little like patches of unknown history is where I think they could go. But you're right, like you can't just make it like, remember the Continental for the John Wick show? That's one where the TV show in the John Wick world, I didn't think it really came together all that well. I watched it all the way through. It's okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be like that. Because you're right. We could get somewhere where it's like the Continental where we're taking the John Wick property, but we're not really going as hard in it. And the action was lacking. But you can see what they were trying to do, but it just didn't come together. I think with this, because George Miller's behind it, he's like the beating heart. I think they could go in cool directions. But yeah, kind of. It depends on what they do. You're definitely
the fact
right about
that George Miller's there. Obviously, Anna Taylor-Joy, good leads, good actors. Again, it's just, you know, going back to the show, don't tell. This is not a movie where you felt like you needed a big backstory or heavy motivations for Furiosa. So the little they gave you was enough.
Oh yeah, definitely
to
worked.
Get absolutely engaged with the character and her story.
And that's what they did for Max in the original three. They didn't really like tell you. They kind of show again, like Miller, he knows what he's doing. George Miller has like a crazy resume. He's done everything from Mad Max to freaking Babe to Happy Feet back to Mad Max. Like this guy, he almost did a Justice League movie at one point.
He did Happy Feet for real.
Yeah, he did Happy Feet. Like he has a crazy resume, but like he understands story, characters, and again, the whole like telling. Like tell the story through these moving pictures, so to speak, but instead of like having stuff like spoon fed. So I loved it. Definitely holds up as an action movie almost
absolutely
10 years
incredible
later.
Movie. Yeah. Heavily recommend it.
Yeah, me too. So what we got next, Juan?
I think it's time for plug of the week, Cozy.
Is it already time? Jeez.
So y'all, I'm gonna go ahead and hit my plug first. Actually, I wanted to plug, I guess, I don't know if I should call it a new or an old video game. And it's called Paper Mario Thousand Years Door.
That is a classic
video game. It's an old video game. It came out, I want to say
2004.
Yeah, 2004. Yeah. Back in the days of the GameCube.
Oh my
but
goodness.
They just remade it HD for the Nintendo Switch.
Dude.
Highly recommend it. Classic RPG. Very humorous. Much better writing. If you're used to just regular Mario games, much more in-depth writing and mechanics than you're used to. It's a pretty far, fun turn-based RPG. Definitely recommend this strongly. What about you, Kosi? What's your plug of the week?
Let's see. So my plug of the week, I've been going back through just watching just old TV shows. And this is going to be an obscure one, but I've just been really, really enjoying it. It's a show called 227.
227.
Yeah, so it's a sitcom that came out in the late 80s, going to 90s.
Oh,
so,
wow, you come up old those
kids. Yeah, so origin of this house, I was watching Martin late one night, Martin TV show, and I saw like Marla Gibbs, who was she was an actress on there once. She was in the show called 227. I remembered it like as a kid, like the intro. It's almost like a gospel themed intro, but I loved it because, you know, like me and my grandma would watch it a lot. So it kind of reminded, it's just real nostalgic. But going to watch it, like, it had a great cast, like Marla Gibbs, Hal Williams, Jackie Harry, people that watched Sister Sister. She was Lisa, their mom, on Sister Sister. Even Regina King, like a young Regina King was on there. It's a great cast. A lot of people that went on to, like, do big things, like, kind of got their start here. So yeah, it's a great just
what's the show about, what's the title about?
Yeah, it's called 227. Just some people that lived in a just middle class apartment building, like,
was it just like the area code?
Yeah, it was the address of the place. So okay. 227 Lexington. It was just about people living in DC. It's like easy watching, like easy, have it on the background doing homework.
I do appreciate shows like that.
Yeah,
I've been watching. We were talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine last
Thank
week.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember. I was reminded about that. I was like, oh, maybe I can find some easy watching. So yeah, 227. I was watching episodes on YouTube. I don't know where you could watch it because it's so old. But yeah.
I think I'll put a second to make a comment on that.
Yeah,
I love modern TV, but it sometimes gets almost exhausting having to pay such close attention to every show.
Oh,
I don't know. Am I the only one? Sometimes you kind of miss that comfort, like, you know, you don't have to pay attention to every show, like, fully. You can kind of a second screen show.
There's so many.
Or, old school. I mean, there's still some sitcoms today, but it used to be that was, you know, the main form of TV, right? There used to be Seinfeld, Friends.
Yeah, like appointment television. Yeah,
that was the biggest thing on TV, stuff like this. And it's nice not to have to keep close track of the plot sometimes, or have high stakes and a cliffhanger at the end of every episode. Sometimes you just want to hang out with your favorite characters.
Yeah, just sit down and not worry about that.
Yeah, you know, low stakes, nothing setting up for the episode next week. It's fun stuff.
Yeah, man. But yeah, that is my plug, and that is our episode. Guys, I want to thank y'all. Hey, Juan, this is a great two-man episode. Next
been a
week,
little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while since we did a two-man, but next week we'll be back to having guests. But as always, guys, thank you guys for listening. And remember to please like and subscribe to us on Spotify. Just search It Was Mooney. And until next time, guys, peace.
Adios.